My name is Erin Glanville, and if I haven't met you before, welcome. Be happy to meet you after the service. I'm lead pastor here at Artisan. We're in the middle of a series on place right now. If you hadn't noticed already with the comments people have made, we've been following the biblical arc from being rooted in creation to being uprooted and displaced to being rerouted towards new creation. And the past three sermons have been thinking about, past three gatherings as a whole, have been looking at what we can learn from specific communities and experiences of being uprooted. So a few weeks ago, we had folks from the Downtown East Side come and speak about this neighborhood as an example of place and what we learn from experiences of being rooted and uprooted in this place. And then the week after, we learned from the folks at the Japanese Hall here. They came and visited us and talked about experience of being exiled or taken and uprooted from this place, put into internment camps, and then returned, and that whole experience of place. Last week, we talked about our specific neighborhoods, and we got into our neighborhood groups and talked about what those specific places we celebrate, but also what we grieve and hope for in those places. And today, we're looking at refugee or forcibly displaced people. So what we can learn from folks who have actually been forced to move, often in quite extreme or violent conditions. It just so happens that the past 3 days, I've been in Ottawa speaking at a conference on refugee solidarities. That was the title of the conference. And I didn't quite plan that when we had this sermon series coming up. Do we need a quick refresher on the word refugee? Do we want a quick refresher on that? Okay, so a refugee is someone who has had to flee or cross an international border. They have to have crossed an international border because they cannot be protected by their own government. For whatever reason, right? They are either because of who they are, you know, something about their identity or their people group, or because of their political position or whatever, they're under threat, their lives are under threat, and so they have to leave their country. So, okay, so that's what we're talking about. And at this conference, we were there with people who had been displaced from the Sudan, from Vietnam, from Palestine, from Ukraine, from Iran, from all around the world, and we're just asking, how can we create solidarity amongst our communities? So not always like competing for who has the worst sort of situation, right? So this is kind of what we were talking about. And because we've been talking about it for 3 days, it was really hard to know what to bring back into this space, right, in this conference. My head was kind of spinning in that world. But I had chosen Deuteronomy 10 as one of the many places in scripture where displaced people or vulnerable migrants or refugees are mentioned. So we're just going to work with that small passage, and hopefully some of the learning that I did over the past few days will come in as well. So Deuteronomy, first of all, this is one of the first five books in the Bible, right? And it's this guidebook that's being given to the ancient Israelites after they've been liberated from slavery and have been wandering in the desert for decades. So this is what they're given as a sort of like, here's the way I want you to live now going forward. I'm not sure what you think about Deuteronomy. I think it's got a bit of a reputation among some folks because it is so ancient. There's a lot in there that it's not legible or recognizable to us as like a flourishing way of life, right? Just because of so different, such an unfamiliar culture. But Deuteronomy, I'll just give you this one little tidbit. Deuteronomy mentions the refugee or the vulnerable migrant, or the word is ger, 22 times. So it's a really big theme. In fact, you might say that there are sort of two ethical themes or directions in Deuteronomy, like ethics in terms of how we treat one another, and that those are slavery, so providing ways out of slavery for those enslaved and giving them a better life. And secondly, providing safety and survival for the widowed, the orphans, and the vulnerable migrants or refugees. So this is a kind of piece of Deuteronomy that's maybe harder to see because of all the other stuff that feels very unfamiliar. But Deuteronomy 10, which Melody read for us, goes like this. The Lord showed his love to your ancestors, Yahweh, your God, shows no partiality and accepts no bribes. He defends the cause of the fatherless and the widow, and loves the foreigner residing among you, giving them food and clothing. And you are to love those who are foreigners, for you yourselves were foreigners in Egypt. This is not the only place this comes up. This is a repeated phrase all the way through Deuteronomy. Do you notice the three directions that love goes here? Do you see where love comes out? That Yahweh loves God's people, that Yahweh loves the stranger or the foreigner or the vulnerable migrant, and that God's people then are asked to love the stranger. They're all intermixed here. And the word here is ahav, and this word translated love has a few different connotations. So here are three at least. It's referring to this steadfast commitment and solidarity, there's that word that I've been thinking about all week, to someone. So this sense of actually like a covenant or a treaty, a political treaty, like we are loyal to each other, we are on each other's side. It also refers to kinship belonging, like we're family. We have a family-like solidarity. You're invited into the most intimate of our relationships. And it refers to emotional connection. So this sort of like tenderness or compassion for one another. So all of these words, all these meanings are caught up in this word love. And there's this sort of triangle, right? The love of God connected to the love of the stranger, connected to the love of God's people, which is often an overlap, right? And then also to one another, this solidarity. So I think the passage really shows that the God that we worship and the one who we follow is committed to this solidarity for those without a home. Like this is a really core solidarity for God. And it's not charity. It's not helping. Like that's not the word that's used here. It isn't a handout. Like if we're family, we're committed to you. We're emotionally connected to you. We see ourselves as on the same side here. It's a commitment to people who are on the move or displaced. It's actually about what I would call solidarity. Does anybody notice what the motivation here is? The motivating line or the reason, the justification? Do you want to go back to that passage just real quick, Heather? Like why? Do you see a why in there anywhere? That very last line, for, right? Because you were once foreigners. I hear so much in that phrase, and that's, again, that is repeated all the way through the Old Testament. You were once, you were once, you were once. I hear in that migration is a universal human story. Right? This like if I asked us to go back into our own histories and be like, can you go back to a time when someone in your family line crossed a border or migrated to countries, we'd all be able to do it at some point, right? Migration is a part of human experience since we started keeping history and before. It's a part of human experience. So this like you were once, like remember that this is part of your story too. The law here is inviting people to remember their own family histories, their own people's histories of displacement, and in that memory, to find solidarity with people who are displaced now. So that's an invitation to us, I think. And when I was teaching at UBC, I'd often get students to do that, like, go back and try to write your own story of migration so you remember, right, these are my people. They share my family history. The second thing I hear in that phrase is just this shared vulnerability, right? Something about the shared vulnerability that we all actually might feel in the world today, this sense that at any point, political instability could hit, people could be refugee. That happens here, you know, in terms of environmental displacement, even in Canada. You suddenly realize, oh, this entire community now has to be uprooted and leave. And that's a kind of shared vulnerability that we have at a global level with one another. We're tied up in each other's thriving and surviving. Someone might be dependent on our welcome right now. We may be dependent on their welcome at another time. And the other thing that I hear in this phrase is just that the welcome of God that we receive is meant to be passed on. Right? This memory of what it feels like to be welcomed. You were once, and you were liberated, and you were received by me. is urging the people of God to remember that whatever welcome and solidarity you received and the way that felt, that's the thing that you offer to others. And when you find yourselves placed, you make it a hospitable place. You make it a welcoming place where people can trust they're going to find solidarity. So in this passage, I think the solidarity that God offers people without a home is the same solidarity God offers God's people when they are rooted in a place. And then God's solidarity in both directions actually brings us into solidarity with each other. Does that make sense? I think that's what I read in this very short passage that's repeated and so central to this sort of new way of being a people that's being offered in Deuteronomy. I've been in refugee support work for a long time, maybe 20 years or so. And so I've experienced this over and over myself at a personal level. I was trying to think, like, where to even start with telling these stories. And one thing that just came up for me was, like, during COVID, I got COVID very early on, and I got a really bad, really bad version. And I was in our basement and not doing well. And my Iranian friend, who was going through the refugee claim system, came by and was the only friend who did this, came by with all of her Iranian medicine and food and brought it and left it outside my door. And then sent us all masks that she had made. And this was the kind of solidarity of someone who had come to Canada and knew a vulnerability, like knew what it was like to be in a place without that network. And so it was important for her that this is like, I know what it's like for people to need network. I'm gonna do this. She did it for me. And ironically, as someone who'd been living here for over a decade, she was the only one of all my friends that did that for me. There was a real solidarity and gift there from her. And that seems like a simple and small thing, but it's just the first thing that kind of came to my mind. Another was just my kids and I used to, on Tuesday nights, go and eat dinner at a local refugee claimant housing provider in our neighborhood. And you might think this is a way of like giving in this place. And I suppose it was, you know, showing up somewhere is something, it's a gift. But it was actually my kids' favorite night of the week because there was a trampoline and there were tons of kids and it was wild. Nobody spoke the same language and it was hilarious. People were making mistakes all the time and I didn't have to make dinner that night of the week. It was a gift to me. And we'd show up and there'd be people like telling these crazy stories about seeing bears for the first time in Coquitlam and misunderstanding each other's stories. And it's just this lively space in our neighborhood, which is often a very lonely place. So that dinner every Tuesday night gathered not just the residents and the people who lived there, but also all the neighbors were invited to come every week to that Tuesday night dinner. And people who had moved away came back for it. And you could hear it when you walked down the street. It was just like a loud, it's like it felt like there's a party going on in that house. And there was a kind of placemaking that happened there because of that community. So those are just two examples of kind of the sort of solidarity that happens in these spaces. There's a lot of really great Christian NGOs serving refugees in Canada. I thought I might just offer some of those as just practical, a practical example. And these ones are actually just in the Lower Mainland. So here in BC is Kinbrace, which is in East Vancouver. And they've got this model of solidarity where refugees and Canadians live together in houses, old heritage houses. There's New Hope Community Society. I don't know if anybody knows Christina Louie, but she's just started as the ED there. And that provides housing for refugees in Surrey. Journey Home in Surrey. That's in Burnaby. With homes that are attached to a church, I think a number of folks here used to go to out in New West, and Inasmuch in Abbotsford. So there's like, I think the Christian sort of mission of being in solidarity has actually, come to fruit in Lower Mainland. And this is just a little aside, and this might not be interesting to you, but I found it interesting when I started my research in this area that Canada was one of the first places in the world, it was the first place in the world, to start what's called a private sponsorship program, which means that individual citizens can pool money together and support refugees to come to Canada. Usually it's just government. So Canada was one of the first ones, and Christian churches we're the first group to start that in conversation with the government. So there's something about our tradition and our faith that that I think compels us into this kind of solidarity work. But how to sustain? I think I want to offer that the impression that refugee work is about giving or sacrificing, being charitable, is part of what makes it hard for people to enter into, or it feels like a big thing to do. Kingbrace, which is the organization, I mean, full disclosure, I'm also on their board. But please don't hear this as a plug in that direction. It's just, this is where a lot of my knowledge comes from. They've done a lot of work thinking about how do we sustain community across difference? How do we sustain a solidarity with people who are displaced? And I want to offer these five values that they've come up with, in part because I think they're not even just about refugee work. When I look at them and the more I dig into them, the more I realize this is really about sustaining us in our placemaking work in general, like how we make place with one another. And I think there's a lot to learn here from the work that's being done to sustain community with displaced people and Canadians together. So I just want to offer them. The first value that they offer is welcome. And they say, we are in solidarity, there's that word again, bearing witness to exile. We live with refugee claimants. These are values and practices that support this work and sustain this kind of community. Trust, we are a community. We affirm dignity and we commit to the best in one another. I actually love that line, I love that line. And I would hope for that to be a line that we take up here, committing to the best in one another. Knowing that we're always failing each other, but I'm gonna stay in relationship because I'm gonna keep committing to the best that you can be. Mutual transformation, we're diverse, striving to listen well, we learn and grow. And then celebration, which is not just happiness, right? It's marking things. We're grateful, amidst joy and sorrow, we discover hope. And then prayer, which is an interesting value to hold in a multicultural and multi-religious community. We are sojourners, held by grace, we journey into the mystery and love of God. These values have really deeply impacted me out of the work that I've done in refugee support spaces. And I thought I would just, does anybody want to offer a comment on any of those before? I want to show you something in a minute, but as you read those, does anything there strike you as that's valuable, or I could see that being really valuable for our community as a way of learning from displaced communities and displaced folks? Anything strike you in those five values? Mutual transformation. Yeah, you want to say why you? Yeah, being in relationship offers us that transformation that like we need one another in order to move forward and grow. We learn from each other's experiences. Yeah, thanks, Crystal. Anything else in these that just that strikes you, or even a question that you have about it? Yeah, the interesting, yeah, that as a community of people who are from a number of different religions and maybe even not, that they together discern the importance of God in that story and in the story of displacement, yeah. That the need to journey into the mystery of God is a sustaining factor for all of them. Yeah, it is really interesting. Yeah. Thanks, Fiona. Well, I thought I might offer you, just as an example, this is concrete. It's a 5-minute clip, and it's a recording that was created for the Becoming Neighbors workshops, which took each one of these and had like a community dialogue around them. And what we did was we just asked a few people, and I'm gonna show you some of them, I'm not gonna show you the whole thing, but we asked some people to just talk about what is the importance of prayer for them in their experience of displacement. So this is just their simple comments and they're personal. And I just wanted to offer it as an example of how we learn from one another about the importance of various parts of our faith and how we might be actually learning from those who are displaced.
The other thing that intrigues me about prayer in this space of forced displacement is that those who are forcibly displaced are actually our teachers. They are our guides, because prayer is about being on this journey. And the moment we become static in our spiritual journey or any part of our being, somehow that's not a healthy place to be. And we never wish forced displacement on other people, but they are closer in my understanding to God than those of us who are secure in our place under our roofs. So yeah, I find it really fascinating and deeply mysterious, and I am so interested in what other people understand about prayer, and so my ears are open.
Doctrines. I maintain a profound belief in God and nature, a unique personal connection with the divine. Prayer for me serves as a conduit for the spiritual relationship, a means of seeking guidance and expressing gratitude. Throughout my journey, especially during challenging times when my family sought refuge and peace, I found solace and strength through prayer. It's this connection with God that I believe has guided me to a more peaceful place. The act of prayer has played a great role in shaping the person I am today. This is the proof to the profound impact spiritually can have on one's life journey.
Yeah, it has to be about hope. In the space of forced displacement, it has to be what gives me hope. And for me, it is what is going to carry me through. I think prayer is relevant in the sense that it also helps me get focused on my journey through forced displacement. I have also seen that prayer is important for me, because when I'm working with people who are forced displacement, they are able, you know, to see hope in all that they do.
Thinking about prayer is not easy to define or explain, as I think prayer is personal but also universal. Yes, I have witnessed forced displacement here in Kimbrace, as many refugee claimants from all over the globe have found a home in our community. By sharing life together, I came to realize that prayer is all we have. It is a gift given to all of us. We have access to this gift here in America, the same as people from the Middle East, Europe, Asia, Africa, and to the rest of the world. It might be different from one country to another, but all of them are heavenly and beautiful. We take this gift wherever we go and keep it as long as we are alive. This gift provides us with the strength we need to endure any hardship, grand or small. This gift is a place where we can rest and release our burdens. This gift is a reminder of hope, love, and redemption. This gift also reminds us that at the end of the day, we're not alone.
By forced displacement, prayer offers consistency in an inconsistent world. It is a place for many to hold tight to, an anchor that is immovable through the toughest of storms. Prayer provides a place for us to reach out and have hope in something bigger than ourselves and our circumstances. Some of the most resilient people I have met in some way put their hope in something bigger than the world around them. That is prayer.
Okay. So just as a concrete example of some of the ways that we can learn from folks with different experiences of place, of not having a place, and what prayer might, as one example, what we might learn about prayer from people in that kind of circumstance. I want to offer you just a second to kind of metabolize that. If you want to turn to the person next to you and just, what was a phrase or an idea that just stood out for you from what you just heard in that clip? Just take 2 minutes to do this briefly with one another. We've got a quiet, whispery conversation this morning. I feel like the rain coming back in after the sun settles everything down. Anybody want to offer something from that brief conversation, or even just from your listening, a reflection on what we might learn from folks who have been displaced? Assuming that the we also includes probably some of us who have been displaced, so. Can I actually just give you the mic, because I'm afraid I might have to repeat everything to you today.
I know that I've experienced people of different faiths needing to pray, so that idea of universal, you know, it's a universal experience. And so it's always really humbling to see somebody's, you know, bowing down in the hallways because they really needed to do that hour of prayer. And another experience I've had is an Iraqi student that I had gotten quite close to. And one evening after a lesson, I could see she was very upset. And I went to her afterwards and, you know, said, "Bushra, are you okay?" And she said, "Rosanna, please just pray with me." And she prayed. She didn't know that. You know, she must have known I was a Christian, but she prayed, and I prayed with her. And being in an evangelical community, you know, thinking, what am I doing praying here with a Muslim woman? But it felt so right, you know, really felt so right.
Thank you. I feel like that's a story I've heard a number of times, of that, like, someone saying, can you just, I don't need something from you, can you just pray with me? Can that, and across faiths, yeah. Anybody else want to offer a reflection based on what we heard? What's that? Okay, can I give you this? You want to say something more about that? Just agape love.
Yeah.
Okay. What's that? A gift, yeah. The gift of love that makes a lot of things possible. Yeah. Thanks, Randy. I think when I read these kinds of passages in Deuteronomy, I think this is good news for who we are and who we could be as God's people. And I think I probably don't even need to say this, but Jesus is even better news than Deuteronomy. because in Jesus, I think we see the solidarity of God at work, right? Gathering a community, showing them how to live in such a way that they are committed to each other's thriving and reducing the social vulnerabilities by being a safety net for each other. So we're going to come to the Lord's table in a moment, and we're going to celebrate that in the memory of what Christ did and in hope for what Christ will do through us, but also beyond us.